Last time on This Paranormal Life. Our story begins in 2016. A 71-year-old man named Leroy Timothy Anderson went to FBI headquarters in Virginia. Leroy, this is serious. Did you kill 33 people? Technically, I've killed 45, but 12 of them haven't been born yet. He also worked for the CIA on a project called Kronos. Project Kronos is a program created to eliminate anyone the CIA deems dangerous. And well, I was the hitman. The first person I killed was in 1678.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Eventually, I stumbled across a WordPress blog. The website was called projectkronos.wordpress.com.
Checks out.
Marcus was a journalist who was writing a book on the British government's Project Kronos, the Ministry of Defense's research into time manipulation. According to Marcus, the government had spent millions on research. Uncle Guy took the box and hid it away and refused to talk about it. He never mentioned it again. Uncle Guy died in 2002, and in his will, he left me the shoebox. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to part two of Project Kronos. Hopefully, if you have made it this far, it means that you have already listened to part one, and you're here to find the conclusion. So if you haven't, please go back and listen to part one of Project Kronos, because a lot of this is going to get real hot, real heavy, real fast, guys. In episode one, we first talked about Leroy Anderson, a man who handed himself into the FBI for being a time-traveling hitman in a project called Kronos. That was a strong start. I don't think anyone really expected that.
No, normally any kind of crazy person like that with a crazy claim, it doesn't usually end in some kind of international conspiracy about a government project like that.
Yeah. We then thought we'd hit the end of the road until I discovered that during the Second World War, the Nazis allegedly had their own time manipulation equipment called Kronos. Could these two be linked? And the final piece of the puzzle was discovering a blog written by a woman named Heather, whose uncle died and left her a mysterious shoebox in his will, filled with papers about a secret British project involving time manipulation. And that's where we are today, folks. We have the shoe... Well, we don't have it, but the shoebox is in the room. The lid is off. Today, we are gonna go through these files one by one and find out what the hell is going on in this secret British operation.
It wasn't just memories in the shoebox. It wasn't just little keepsakes, okay?
No. Object one, a solid gold swastika. I think these two are linked. And I think Uncle Guy is a racist. All right, without further ado, guys, let's get stuck in. The first object in the box was a letter from a man named Marcus, dated 11th of July, 1963. Dear Guy, if you are reading this, then I fear the worst. What you decide to do with the enclosed information is up to you, but I would urge the utmost caution. I'm absolutely sure that my telephone has been bugged and I'm being watched. I've received several warnings to drop this story. Always by mouth. They're careful to leave nothing that can be traced. I am enclosing the last few items that I have left. All of my other research papers were stolen, and it's only pure luck that I've had these pieces with me at the time. I shall leave this letter and the remaining items with my solicitor and request that on the event of my death or disappearance, they be forwarded to you. I am absolutely convinced that Annie was either successful in replicating the 1936 experiments or very close. I've received contradictory reports that Annie J is alive and well, living with an English scientist. I've also heard rumors that she was snatched by the Russians. To confuse matters further, I've also been told she's working with two scientists who originally developed the technology, Stephen and Conrad. I imagine you're asking yourself, with so much misinformation, what makes me think I have finally found the story to break my career? The only answer I have is that the warnings I receive have become more frequent, and I firmly believe this is because I am close to finding out the truth about Project Kronos. If you are reading this, then someone has stopped me. I would pass no judgment on you should you decide to destroy the contents of this package. Warmest wishes, dear friend. Goodbye.
So it sounds like in trying to find the story to break his career, he accidentally broke his goddamn life.
Exactly.
The only way Guy got this was if this journalist died or was murdered.
You know, and this is a huge turning point for journalists who are investigating something very controversial. If I was working for a newspaper, you know, late night, maybe it's an expose on some bad stuff that's going down, and 3 in the morning, Guy shows up to my front door, gun to my head, and he says, "Drop the story." I say, "You got it, buddy. It's gone. It's dropped." Because I don't want to die.
Yeah, do you want me to do anything else for you? I'll shine your goddamn shoes, whatever it takes to get the gun pointed away.
Who do you work for? Let me write about your company. You seem like you're pretty strong.
It doesn't even take a gun, to be honest. Let's face it, in the movies, they rarely even have it. It's just a guy in a trench coat and a hat, and he goes,
"If you know what's good for you, you'll shut the f*** up." For lack of, you know, he might choose.
Usually they're a little more stylish than
that. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but something to the effect of, you got a nice girl there. You got a nice girl. You got a nice kid. Why don't you take a holiday? All right. Why don't you leave the city for a while? Huh?
Okay.
Oh, that was.
Are you paying? Wait, who's paying?
No, you're paying. I'm just saying, take a holiday, Chief. All right, you look tired. I'll be afraid what would happen if you hang around the city any longer.
No, so that the first part was quite nice because you're worrying about like my because things have been tough at home. I've been working late on this big case.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't know if you heard about it, but there was like an animal.
Yeah, you don't need to tell me this.
There was an
animal. No, you don't need to tell. I don't want to know any details of the case. You don't want to say that out loud.
Okay.
In fact, the reason I'm here is because I don't want you talking about the case anymore.
I thought you were here because you were trying to sell me a holiday.
I'm not selling... Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm not selling you the holiday. I'm telling you, you look like you need a holiday.
I do. I do need a holiday. Because some of the shit I've learned in the last couple days about what this corporation has been doing...
Okay, you're going to
shut... nuclear...
No.
What?
This is the... Okay, you're not getting this. All right, Chief?
Who are you?
Listen, I'm...
How'd you get in my living room?
A little... mockingbird that has come to sing a little song for you, okay?
Okay.
And that song is "Shut the f*** up and all get right. your goddamn family and get the f*** out of town."
Okay, I'm confused. Hold on one second. Mary! Did you call a travel agent?
Oh, Christ.
He says you said we were going on holiday.
You're not... Okay, listen. If you shut the f*** up for a second, I will... I'll buy the flights.
That was very kind of you. By the way, the story went out yesterday.
I take out a piano wire.
Oh! So for the record, this letter was from Marcus, who, as we know, was the newspaper reporter who was writing an expose about the British government's experiments with time travel when he died in a car crash. In this first letter, we're hearing him talk about a few key characters. First, a woman named Annie J., the scientist whose diary pages are in this shoebox, and two guys named Stephen and Conrad. Marcus ended the letter with, "P.S. I'm enclosing a photograph from, I think, 1911. It belonged to a man named Arnold S., who I met just once before he died. He was quite decrepit at the time, but swore blind that the woman in the photograph was Annie J. But Annie J. wasn't born until 1913.
So... You're gonna have to help me here, okay? Right. So I get.
I'm gonna be throwing a lot of names.
I get.
At you.
Okay.
And
due to the classified nature
of the documents, we're gonna be using a lot of initials because their names are classified.
You've classified them.
Heather classified them.
Okay. So I'm with you. So this is Annie. She was born in 1913, but somehow she's appearing in this photo
as a woman.
As a woman in 1911.
Yeah, that's weird.
One issue. Who the f*** is Annie?
We're about to find out, kid. As the diary begins. 27th of April. After all these years, why would I finally feel the need to put pen to paper and keep a diary? Surely this is more the territory of a teenage girl than a grown woman. It comes in part at the urging of my assistant and friend, Vassy. I think it's more than that, though. I think, as my work reaches a conclusion, I want to document my experiences, both then and now. It feels important that my experiences and memories of Stephen and Conrad are recorded for others to share, should they desire. Finally, I suppose I am hoping that my words will help explain the actions and choices I've made in my life. If you are reading this, then I am gone. Signed, Annie.
It seems like if your letter ends up in this box, it's because you're dead.
It's because you're either dead or don't exist yet.
Imagine being born and you've written several books already somehow. It's like you're born and you've already got a hit TV show.
We're dealing with time travel here, folks. It's not the most black and white premise for a paranormal investigation. But I assure you that I have gone through all these pages and I will make it as crystal clear as to what is going on.
Okay, great. So I'm going to be on behalf of the listeners here. It's got to make sense to me, and I'm going to need you to be crystal clear.
Well, if you're going to be speaking on behalf of the listeners, I'll tell you right now, shut the f*** up and let me do the story.
Okay, so I have to stop you there because it is a podcast and it is me and you usually talking and investigating together. So probably not going to, quote, shut the f*** up.
All right. Well, if we're podcasting together and you're like half yourself, half the listeners, half of you needs to shut the f*** up. So that's all.
I've asked a couple of things in this episode so far. I'm sensing a little.
I've read one letter and you've asked me one thing. So the ratio is already pretty f***ed up. So I'm going to need you to just zip it for a little bit as I get through some of these. Here's a letter from the year 4000. No questions, please.
I'm going to have questions because it's very far in the future.
A diary entry from Kit Greer Mulvenna.
No questions?
No questions. If you were the real Kit, you'd know what you'd written.
You have a gun pointed to my head. If you were a real Kit, you'd know that, wouldn't you, clone Kit?
Wouldn't you, Annie J? The next piece of paper from the box is a clipping from a newspaper of a report.
Hunt for missing Cambridge physicist. The British Intelligence Service has been brought into the hunt for missing physicist Annie J. Miss J, who is well respected for her work in the field of quantum mechanics, was last seen 10 days ago at her Cambridge University laboratory. As a young student at the university, she was said to have been linked to a private entity involving research into time travel. Her contemporaries ridiculed the line of research as fictional, and Miss Annie came close to expulsion from the university. The story takes an unusual twist in that her laboratory assistant, Miss Vassie A., a former student of Moscow University and citizen of the USSR, disappeared 3 days after Miss Annie. Security officers have screened Miss Annie several times in the last few years, yet rumors still abound. The possibility of her defection to the USSR is a common topic currently on the Cambridge campuses. However, there have also been suggestions that MI5 themselves may be directly involved with the disappearance of both women.
Listen, quantum physicists don't just disappear.
No.
That's like saying Jason Bourne just disappeared, okay? They're in a very, very high-risk occupation.
Yeah.
I don't know what the f*** quantum physics really is, but I imagine Annie's tinkering around with the quantum computer somewhere. She, you know, makes one of the screws a little loose and she's gone from this universe.
Exactly. The only reason a quantum mechanic is disappearing is because she did something wrong, or she did something right. Exactly. And we're about to find out which one it was. Kit, I have a picture. Just because I got so much evidence from this shoebox, I'm going to absolutely drown you in it. Here is a picture right here of the newspaper clipping, which you can see, to validate its authenticity. Name's obviously redacted.
This seems weird because if the names are redacted and this is a real newspaper report, surely we could just find this report somewhere online. Anyway, for avoidance of doubt, this is seemingly a real newspaper report. Hunt for missing Cambridge physicist. Actually, there's a picture as well of presumably Annie.
Yeah, weirdly not redacted as well.
Yeah. Like usually, I mean, I guess that was before they could pixelate things.
Underneath the newspaper clipping were more pages from her diary. 28th of April, 1953. I didn't get back to the lab until 4 p.m. Vassie and I checked in with the experiment and everything is running on course. I shall tell more about that side of things later, but now, refreshed with a cup of tea. Now, to make matters even more interesting, the next item in the shoebox was in an envelope labeled Donald McLean, 1962. Inside the envelope was a small bit of quarter-inch tape. Now, Heather, who owned the box, managed to convert it into an MP3 while, as we said, beeping out Annie's second name to preserve anonymity. Kit, I have that recording right here.
Now, I'm interested in the rumors that the Cambridge Five were actually six. Would you care to comment?
Well, I really don't feel that this is what I agreed to talk to you about.
Could you confirm whether or not you knew any whilst you studied at Cambridge?
I did know any, yes.
It has been suggested that whilst working on top-secret research into the possibility of manipulating time, Annie was passing her findings on to the Soviet Union.
I don't know anything about that, I'm afraid.
And do you have any idea of Annie's whereabouts?
I'm afraid I can't possibly comment.
Is she currently in the Soviet Union?
Comment.
Mr. McClay, have you ever heard of Project Kronos?
The Project Kronos? I'm sorry, I really must go.
Wow, right. That is some Academy Award level acting.
Watch it, all right? That's the recording that was in the shoebox recovered by Heather, converted from quarter-inch tape into an MP3 and uploaded onto SoundCloud.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not actually yet claiming that the tape itself is some sort of fake. I'm just saying, the guy saying, oh, what's that, Project Kronos? Oh, much scared, bye-bye now.
Yeah, he kind of had a pretty good thing going where he's like, I'm afraid I can't comment on that. No,
yeah,
comment.
Stonewall, I'm pleading the fifth.
Yeah, and then he's like, you know, he's got like a little cup of tea and he's having a sip and they're like, oh, before I go, can I ask you about Project Kronos? Oh, shit. Oh, no comment. It's like, well, that's weird you reacted that way as soon as I mentioned Kronos, because it sounded like you didn't know about anything else, but you really know about Project Kronos.
Yeah, you seem upset that I know about Project Kronos.
It's like, no. Actually, I guess I could tell you about it because I could just go back in time and make this never happen.
What was that you said?
Nothing. Interesting stuff. You know, we've got some mention of this girl, this scientist, Annie J., people asking about her whereabouts. People wondering, do you know if she defected and is now at the USSR? Do you know, did she exist? Was she working at the university? Where did she disappear to? And yet, no answers, just more questions.
That is interesting because, you know, especially back then, people thought of the USSR, the Russia as, you know, the Iron Curtain. Isn't that what they called it? It was like, you know, nothing got in, nothing got out. So unlike these days where even in Russia, of course, they have everything we've got, internet,
McDonald's,
social media. Well, I was thinking more communication technologies.
IHOP.
I don't think they even have IHOP. That's,
you know,
very
American. It's an international house of pancakes. They probably do have one.
It's kind of a misnomer. I think it's literally, it might be
it's
US
not called
and Canada.
The fucking national house of the great American
you
house
gotta move
of pancakes.
Back. You got to move past IHOP. I was thinking more internet, social media, telephone communications.
Dunkin' Donuts. At the very least.
You're just talking about American fast food chains.
Yeah, but they have them over here. They have them in the UK. They got Dunkin' Donuts.
It's completely besides the point.
All right.
The point is...
What's the point then? I'm missing out on here.
That if Annie went to the USSR back in the day, no one would know.
They wouldn't even have a Krispy Kreme.
Oh, jeez.
At the very least. Whereas nowadays...
She might have had Krispy Kremes. She might have had. They had donuts then.
Yes,
and even in Russia.
They probably...
It wouldn't make a difference to the story though,
right.
Would it?
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see that, yeah. So you're thinking like not donuts, like a Subway or something. I get what you're saying.
Forget I said anything.
I get what you're saying. Because it's the whole thing with the Iron Curtain is that you don't know what's behind it, right? Isn't that what you were implying?
Yeah.
I feel like we're on the same page, which is good.
Yeah. Pancakes. Starbucks, probably didn't have that either.
The next diary entry is from the 2nd of May, 1953. I'm occasionally going to have to make entries in cipher to this diary. There are certain things that I dare not write down, in case this is read while I'm still around. And then, three lines of untranslatable gobbledygook. This is going to be a huge part of the diaries moving forward, is that essentially it's one paragraph, two paragraphs of English,
yeah,
and then ending it with a paragraph in a broken code.
Interesting. Granted,
I didn't try very hard, but I wasn't able to decipher, and to my knowledge, hasn't been deciphered.
And judging by the number of plays on that SoundCloud track that you played to us, It seems like a lot of people aren't working on this thing.
No, we could be the first to crack this, guys.
Very exciting.
The next diary entry, 2 days later, the 4th of May. Vasi and I spent the morning refitting parts to the machine. It's running at about 23% capacity. So far, the results look good. We're planning on running some inanimate object tests in the next week or so. The good news is, I know we get at least as far as moving an inanimate object. How? Because this afternoon, a tiny folded piece of paper appeared in the machine. It had a date written on it, in Vasi's handwriting.
What? So Annie and Vasi are trying to get this machine working?
Mm-hmm. They're having some problems with power at the minute.
And only got it to 23% capacity, but they're trying to work on some inanimate objects. But already, Vasi, the assistant, has seemingly reached her little arm through time and dropped the piece of paper there.
Apparently so. A piece of paper with a date on it has appeared in the machine. Very strange. 5th of May, 1953. We ran a full power test of the latest machine and blew pretty much every circuit it contained. An enormous amount of costly damage. At that point, Stephen went into one of his spirals. He spent his days staring at the river or wandering aimlessly around the garden. Conrad, meanwhile, tirelessly picked up the pieces, a pattern that had often been repeated over the years. He and I stripped the machine back to its basic components, saved what we could, and made an inventory of what replacements we would need. They biffed it. They went from 23% to 100%, and the thing exploded.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. You can't go from just warming up courtside to then trying to do a triple alley-oop dunk.
Yeah, exactly.
In the next move.
This is the equivalent of waking up in the morning, Running to a basketball court, not stretching once, and attempting the Space Jam half-court slam dunk. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You are going to break one of every bone of your body.
For a start, you're in the wrong cinematic universe. It's only possible in the Space Jam universe.
Exactly. That was a huge mistake. You know, I can see that. You get a little bit of success. You get a note, possibly, from the future. And it's like, hey, let's crank this bad boy up. Let's go take a selfie with a T-Rex.
Yeah.
But you got all the time in the world, you crazy little bastards. You don't need to rush it. If anything, you could probably take 5. You could stop right there.
Quit your job, yeah.
Then when you're like retired, 80 years old, you're like, you know what? I will go back and do the time machine. Because then if you go back with all the answers, then you can... I'm getting confused now. Would I still be old?
You're getting confused by just aging.
Would I be old if I go back in time?
It depends on the type of time travel, bud.
That's a good point.
So you probably shouldn't wait 80 years.
Don't
just
wait
to
80
be
years.
Careful.
Scrap that. You know what? It. Go back in time,
right?
Kill yourself, because he knows too much already. Take his place.
No, why would you kill yourself? That doesn't make any sense.
That make me young?
No,
I'm
killing yourself back in time. That would make you disappear into smoke,
or at the very least, be replacing your young self with an older version.
Or he's just pointing a gun in his own head. Will this make me young?
This is the only time machine I need.
This is creepy, though. You know, this is a crazy device straight out of sci-fi movies. How creeped out would you be if your future self started sending you messages through time?
I know, which is kind of cool, because as she wrote in the diary, okay, I know we have some success with this machine because I got sent something back in time from myself. Very cool.
It's like that old saying, you know, they're like, if you could go back in time and tell your younger self a piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah.
Except Vasi biffed it. Vasi didn't even tell any advice, was just wrote a date.
That's true, yeah. I guess you want to start small.
Right.
You'd be a little freaked out if you're building a time machine and the first thing you get is like the coordinates to Bin Laden's lair. You're like, should I stop building the time machine now? Or should I go kill Bin Laden?
Who is Bin Laden?
This is
too early.
It's 1953. Yeah, you got to start slow. You got to start slow with just a little, hey, what's up? Your pal, future you, you know? Keep it light.
Right.
The next diary entry, 11th of May, 1953. I got a visit from MI5 this morning. I had just arrived at the lab when two suits turned up. It isn't as exciting as it sounds. It happens fairly frequently. They claimed today that they were just doing a routine screening, but you can tell by their beady little eyes that they were checking up on progress. They're always particularly interested in questioning Vasi. She's Russian, ergo she must be a spy. The odd thing is, we usually get a visit every 6 months or so, but the last one we had was early March. One does wonder if, perhaps, they're not as clueless as they seem.
I don't know why anyone would think they're clueless. They're MI5.
Yeah, if anything, they're pretty clued.
They're pretty clued in. That's their raison d'etre.
I actually don't know what MI5 stands for, except for Mission Impossible 5, which was pretty dope.
Pretty good branding, yeah. Right there. Will we find out?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to go with, like, Her Majesty's Intelligence something.
So it was called Mission Impossible 5 Rogue Nation.
Okay, no, not the movie.
Oh, I mean, what the thing stands for. Okay. Yo, there's an MI7? There's an MI6? I assume there would be, implying that, you know, 7 implies that there is 6.
I mean, to be fair, if they skip one, you know that's the most secretive of all.
Yeah.
You got to be worried about MI 1 through 4.
It stands for Military Intelligence Section 5.
Ooh, that's pretty dope.
Apparently.
That's pretty dope.
So MI5 is the United Kingdom's Domestic Counterintelligence and Security Agency, which sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a cool name.
I'd love it if, like, MI4 was just like catering, keeping the vending machines stacked. MI3, cleaning services. Yeah, they come in when MI2 are done. They, you know, restock the printers. They make sure that the kitchen area is all cleaned up.
Sure.
MI1? Retired, obviously. It was the first. They were gone. They're like 90 years old now.
MI7, they're the new generation. They're millennials. They're on TikTok. They're on Snapchat. They're mostly the social media arm of the military.
At the end of this diary entry, of course, is another string of sentences all written in code.
Wow, we gotta crack this code, man. That seems like it's the most important bit.
Dude, I will say, so this is the only bit that I've managed to kind of work out so far. There is one part of this section that says XE5. So assuming that there's no change in numbers, XE5 is referring to MI5, which would also imply that X equals M and E equals I. So you could already use that as a basis to start translating it. Anytime there's an X, it's an M, and an E is an I.
I hear what you're saying. So this is some sort of straightforward substitution cipher.
A substitution jutsu, if you will.
So we are simply changing the letters based on a static cipher. This isn't some kind of complicated encryption code.
Yeah, which, you know, you might expect from someone who works in quantum mechanics to be a bit more high tech.
But I mean, by the way, they worked in quantum mechanics back in the 50s, so they didn't know jack shit.
Yeah, that's basically grade 1 mathematics now. 2 plus 2, 2 plus 3.
Yeah, that was quantum back in the day.
The next diary entry is the 13th of May, 1953. We fitted the tubes and tuned the machine first thing to prepare for the test. It started up perfectly, and we raised it to 47% capacity. For the experiment, I decided to prepare 100 pieces of folded paper. I wrote the date on 99 of them, and Vasi wrote the date on 1. We put the 100 pieces into a bag, plucked one out at random, still folded, and placed the paper in the machine. It took several seconds for the paper to completely disappear, but disappear it did. Then Vasi and I checked the other 99 pieces of paper. Each one was in my handwriting.
What?
This is actually super clever. They know that the slip of paper that got sent back was in Vasi's handwriting.
That's right.
So what they did was, in a bag, had one piece of paper with Vasi's handwriting on it and 99 slips with Annie's. So to prove that it is the same piece of paper that was sent back, I mean, mathematically, the odds are super against it being Vasi's, unless it is the piece of paper that was sent back, in which case it would have to be Vasi's.
You have a nosebleed, sir.
You have to tell me that you're understanding this.
This is interesting. Yeah. I guess I'm getting a little confused because they knew of Vasi's handwriting sent back through time.
Yeah.
They have the opportunity to change the course of history by Vasi not writing a piece of paper.
What? Now,
what if they had
nostril starts bleeding?
What if they had written 100 pieces of paper with just Annie's handwriting?
I don't understand how paradoxes work, but I think that would destroy the universe.
Wow. Okay.
Or maybe the second that they don't send it back, it's rewritten, like time is rewritten immediately. So they've forgotten that it was ever anything else.
Yeah, they like dovetail into a different universe where Vasi never sent back the note in the first place.
Yeah. Like if I have a time machine and I send Rory back an apple and I'm like, dope, I love this apple. Thank you. A couple weeks later, I build the time machine and send myself back a banana. The second that banana hits the time machine, I'm like, dope, that's the banana that I sent back that I have on my shelf. It's always been a banana. You know, I don't know how this thing overwrites itself.
This is pretty fascinating stuff, guys. Okay, I take it back. It wasn't 2+2. They kind of knew something.
They know a little bit. The only thing, she wrote, that tempers my excitement slightly is that I would have expected the future me to have sent other messages to the present me by now.
Hmm, so true. That's what happened? Point. It's like there's some kind of event horizon beyond which they cannot see or travel.
Yeah, is that the destruction of the time machine? Who knows? The next entry, 18th of May, 1953, 5 days later. We received another visit from MI5 today. Not the usual suits, but far more intelligent. I'm not sure how, but I think they're aware of how far along we are with the experiments. They questioned me on my research, asked where my loyalties lay, and told me in no uncertain terms that if my experiments proved successful, I would be expected to do my bit for the country. I could see the possibilities running around my interviewer's mind, and no matter how hard I try to explain to him that time travel cannot affect events, they seem fixated on using my research as a tool. Of course, if we could travel back through time and change events, it would be an incredibly powerful machine. The thought of being able to prevent the Second World War, for example, by sending some sort of time-traveling assassin back is appealing.
My God. We've heard that phrase before, time-traveling assassin.
Can you believe my shock when I read this diary entry from the 18th of May, 1953, talking about a time-traveling assassin being sent back to change world events by a government?
The only problem is, he biffed it. There was World War II and World War I.
It's true. That is very true.
But doesn't discount the possibility that a time-traveling assassin exists.
Yeah. And look, guys, maybe World War II, as we know it right now, is the good outcome.
That was a warm-up for World War Tres.
Yeah, maybe World War Tres is when Hitler became a wizard, all right?
Well, he died in World War II, so...
I'm saying if he hadn't, then he could have gone on to... And maybe everyone says he died in that bunker. You know who else was in that bunker with him? Leroy Anderson.
Leroy Anderson's had 400 years of practice making things look like a suicide.
But of course, over 400 years of assassinating humans is going to weigh on a human's heart, which is what happened to Leroy, and he had to come clean.
Yeah.
Annie went on to write, "However, the science now just does not support this sort of interference. Let me explain further. If our time-traveling assassin could go back to, say, 1930 and shoot Hitler before he won the war, they would simply move to a timeline in a parallel universe in which Hitler is always shot. In the original universe, it's still a timeline where Hitler wasn't killed. You see, in some universes, Hitler survives. In others, he's shot. In others, he never even existed. Every possible outcome is present somewhere in our collection of infinite universes." And then, of course, a series of code at the end of the entry. Now, what she's saying here is, if Leroy Anderson was indeed a time-traveling assassin, the CIA, the FBI, whoever is working on this time machine would have to have solved it in a way that it would make going back and changing past events change the current timeline and not split the timeline into parallel universes. You know, I don't even know where you start with that.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much uncharted territory because to this day, I mean, we are 70 years later than Annie's writing this and we still do not know whether there is a linear timeline in which all of human history has occurred or whether there is an infinite array of parallel timelines in which every possible event and outcome has happened.
If we were working at a university, we're two university peers, and sure. I'm like, hey, I'm going to look at solving some of the mathematical equations of the universe, just some basic stuff. If you could look at how to change events in the past to not split the current timeline into parallel universes, that would be great. That would be dope.
If you could help me with that, because that seems like your job is a lot more possible than my job.
Well, mine's not possible. I'm looking at the mysterious equations that make up the matter of the universe.
Yeah.
And you can't find out how just to not split the timeline?
Okay, well, if you think it's so easy, because I could actually have a pretty good crack at your problem. So if we want to swap, if you think you've got this...
Brother, I'd love to swap, bro. I'd love to swap. Unfortunately, my grant has already been delivered. I'm getting paid to do the universe shit. I'm going to find out why Mars is red.
Okay,
right?
Well,
I'm
going to find out... Why has my grant been granted to let me study whatever I want? Why are you putting this on me, bro?
I'm the guy who gets to give out the grant money. I gave myself a grant.
So you gave yourself the grant?
Yeah, I gave myself a grant money. I want to look at the universe. I want to find an. I want to find out what makes up an alien. I want to find out what's the coolest planet to have a beer on. The questions of the universe. And I need you to find out that if I go out there, if I'm going to do anything, it's going to fuck with the timelines.
Yeah. What the fuck are you planning on doing? Because you seem really worried about messing up timelines and you seem to be giving me zero wiggle room on investigating this myself. Because I don't really want to do it. I'll be clear.
Let me be very clear. You have zero wiggle room. Not even an inch either way. Because you know what happens when time wiggles? It separates. Mitosis, my friend. You get multiple dimensions.
So right? You obviously understand this far better than I do.
Yeah, I got pretty close last year with the first grant. It was really, they gave me like 100 grand investigating the timelines.
Do I get 100 grand?
No, absolutely. I spent like 10 years worth of grant on my course last year.
You are the worst.
Which was learn. I was trying to find out how to split the timelines. And
now you want to find out how not to split the timelines?
Yeah, I don't know how to shut the machine. I basically need you to shut down the
machine. What machine are you talking about?
I built a machine. So there seems to be split in timelines left, right, and center. How do I word this? I don't need you to find out how not to split the timelines as much as I need you to break the machine.
I quit.
Fair. Very fair. But you could also argue that this is another universe in which you do not quit.
No, I'm walking away.
You're walking it right.
Yeah.
This is the one
where
you quit.
Here's my security clearance.
All right.
I'm good.
Thanks. All right. Claire, send in the next one. Open double doors.
It's a clone of me.
The next diary entry is the 30th of May, 1953. I met Dr. S first thing in the morning, and he gave me the envelope. The envelope is addressed to me, Miss Annie J, and him, Dr. Arnold S, University of Cambridge, and is postmarked July 11th, 1911.
Whoa.
It was delivered with a message asking Dr. S to hand the letter over to a Miss Annie J early in the morning of the 30th of May, 1953.
So to be clear, Annie was born in 1913, and yet this letter was addressed to her 2 years before she was even born.
How did they even know her name? Once I'd said my goodbyes to Dr. S, I cut open the envelope and pulled out a postcard. Inside the letter was the solution to the power consumption problem. And it's so obvious and so simple now that I see it. Of course, I recognize the handwriting immediately. And the last diary entry from the box. The 31st of May, 1953. I have to admit, I'm more frightened than I thought I would be. So I took a healthy dose of laudanum? Laudanum? Mm-hmm. So I took a healthy... You're like, oh yeah, brother, that's the good shit. Laudium? Oh yeah. You want a time travel?
You'll wake up in a stripper's bedroom in Vegas in 3 days' time.
This one will make you time travel. This one will make you go to the moon. This one will make your insides, outsides, and your hair into bees.
This one will fuck up your whole day.
That's a picture of your ex-wife. Yep. I feel like I undercut the dramatic tones of the final diary entry there, so...
I don't think you did. It's all good.
31st of May, 1953. I may have to admit I'm more frightened than I thought I would be. So I took a healthy dose of laudanum to help me get through. I saw Stephen and Conrad briefly, which made me feel better. The adjustments to the machine were fairly minor. It's running well at 100%. My only concern is the slight flickers of static, but evidence suggests I make a successful journey, so I need to take a leap of faith. I've set the destination to 1911. The last piece of writing in the box is scribbled on a note that simply says, "They are smashing through the door. I must hurry." And then a line of code.
Well, she gave some pretty spicy stuff there, so I don't know what the code is saying.
Yeah, you pretty much laid it all out on the table.
Yeah, I mean, they're smashing through the door. Must go. Anyway, here's a final concluding paragraph about my thoughts on the day.
That only I can decipher, and now I don't exist, because I've gone back to 2 years before I was born.
So those MIB / MI5 assholes were busting through the door trying to take the technology for Her Majesty's Secret Service, but they were getting out of the bish.
Yeah, they were going. They were gone. The last piece of evidence in the box is itself the postcard that was sent in the envelope that reads, "Dear Annie, if all goes according to plan, Dr. Arnold should give you this on the 30th of May, 1953, over 40 years from now. Use the information contained if you desire. After all, in some universes you will, and others you won't. The solution to the power consumption issue is as follows." And there's several lines of blacked out text. "I suppose if you've got this far, then you are beyond trying to understand paradoxes. Paradoxes are indeed only for those who can view time as a straight line from point A to point B. I can absolutely confirm Stephen's prediction that it is so much more. It's a line, a loop, a tangle of threads, a sculpture of dazzling complexity. Best of luck. Signed, Annie J." This, my friends, is what we call in the business a paradox.
This is a complete loop.
Annie J sent herself the instructions on how to fix the machine that she learnt from a postcard from herself in the past.
That's right.
So the only way she could have got that is if we just said she jumps into the machine and goes back in time to 1911 to be there to create the postcard to send to her in the future that enables her to go back in time to write the postcard, to have the way to fix the machine to send to her. You see what I'm doing? Send her in the future to be able to fix the machine.
To go back
to the time to where she could write the postcard.
It's a loop. It's a paradox.
It's a loop.
But did she not say herself that it is not a straight line? It's so much more than that. It was very beautiful. I think she said it is a sculpture of infinite complexity.
Some bullshit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't have the
confines.
It's like
a entangler. I think she said it's like a whiz.
No,
like
she didn't liken it to like a Pokemon because she was born in 1913.
It's like a plate of spaghetti with buttery noodles. All right, and you're trying to grab those noodles, and they're slipping and sliding.
Okay, well, it is like buttery noodle because there is no paradox. Clearly, in some alternate universe, she discovers the solution to the problem and then sends the information back to herself and solves the problem.
All right, but you're saying instead of it being like a perfect loop, one Annie in one timeline got it right, and this
didn't need Annie's help.
So that's where it was. That's where it started.
That's one theory.
And now this code to fix the machine is being like ping-ponged across the universes where all the Annies did need it from another Annie.
That's right.
But then the only problem is, hear me out, if the first Annie managed to solve the machine and get it working properly, then why would the second Annie to receive the information on how to fix it be getting a letter from 1911? Wouldn't the letter be from the point in which she managed to fix the machine? Why would the first Annie need to go back in time to send the second Annie a letter?
I don't know, she just want to f*** with everyone's head by sending a letter from before she was even born.
Imagine we just stopped the podcast there. No outro music, no anything. It just went on to the next one.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Look, guys, it's time travel, you know? It's an incredibly convoluted process, especially when it comes to trying to break it down and understand the laws of how it works. That's one of the reasons why we can't do it, for as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, I wanted to include this story with Heather, with Annie in the shoebox, not only because it is an incredible bit of narrative writing, but it is chock-a-block with evidence. Guys, I was reading out diary entries, but I didn't show them to Kit for the sake of time, but every single one of these has also been scanned by hand and uploaded to the blog. Even the postcard at the end, which I was talking about, exists. It's been scanned. All of these documents, these are all real. And I gotta say, if they have been doctored, they did a pretty damn good job. It genuinely looks like these were written with an ink. What do you call those pens?
Fountain pen?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Eagle feathers? Feather pens?
Well, that's different, yeah.
Well, it's like a majestic-ass wizard's... There we go, a quill. They look like they were written by Quill.
Yeah, but we still are presented with a problem, which is, like you mentioned, it is possible that these have been faked, that someone could have gone to painstaking detail, and such as in the case of the news report, that whilst somewhat unlikely, it is possible someone could have created that report.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, as someone who has spent a lot of time making modern day audio that's been recorded sound like it was recorded in the olden days. The MP3 that we listened to from SoundCloud, it's treading the line.
It is. It was like too clean.
There was something about it, a little too clean. I like the touch of the delays between voices as if it was recorded on two ends of a telephone.
Mm.
Not sure that technology existed in whenever it was, 1960 something, being able to record telephone lines. With tape? Oh, no, I guess it probably did. Yeah. Could. There's a lot of stuff in here that definitely requires you to suspend all disbelief, which is a big ask.
Not to mention the time travel, which as of today is deemed by the scientific establishment as impossible.
Mm-hmm. I will also say, in terms of the diary entries, I cut a lot of stuff out.
Sure.
I cut a lot of stuff out that was very, very unnecessary. And yeah, you could say that that would maybe increase the chances of it being an authentic diary. Because there's a lot of stuff in there that, you know, you would be like, I had a sandwich today. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But also a lot of the stuff that was in here, it felt like exposition from a film or a novel or something. Mm. It was all a bit fictitious. That would lead me to believe that maybe this Heather stuff, as much as I want it to be real, possibly isn't real.
But what I would love to see more than anything else is someone in the paranormal nation out there turn their cryptography skills to this cipher created by Annie.
Yeah.
And try and decode some of this.
Yeah, for sure. This story is great. I love the way that we can break down these three stories between Leroy Anderson, the time-traveling assassin, Die Glock, the Nazi bell, and the shoebox that Heather inherited from her dead uncle. They all tie together, guys. They all talk about Project Kronos. They all talk about time traveling and assassins and World War II. There's so many overlapping parts that, I mean, as soon as I read the last couple stories, I was like, this is a two-parter for sure. It's too interesting to try and squeeze into a two-hour-long episode of this paranormal life. Unfortunately, as we do not have a time machine ourselves, time is of the essence, Kit. And we have to come down on a conclusion. Our question today is, did Project Kronos in any form involve a functioning time machine? Be it a machine to send an assassin back to kill a president, in the form of a giant Nazi bell nicknamed the Beehive, or is it in fact a piece of equipment from Cambridge University that was being co-funded by the British government?
It is interesting that we have so many parallel versions of the Project Kronos time machine that I guess the idea is that they all use the similar technology that finally culminated in Annie's successful journey through time.
Yeah.
Whilst I do absolutely love the idea of the time-traveling assassin, and not to mention the idea of a secretive time travel project on Cambridge's own campus, I do worry that this case is an example of the type of case that uses real historical events to conflate with paranormal theories, which make them seem a little bit more believable.
Right.
So we do know that the Nazis in World War II era Germany, they had incredible advanced technologies ahead of many other countries in certain aspects, like the rockets, stuff that would go on to become the early NASA program.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started on how they got there, folks. Right. We'll be talking about the Thule Society, the secret expeditions that they took in the wars. That's where they got it. They got ancient technology from the aliens that helped build society.
Earth is hollow.
Earth is hollow. Hitler is in there, still alive, because the ancient aliens that live in Agartha,
okay,
my friend, can live for hundreds of years. Sorry, I got distracted there.
You know, and there could have been Diglock. I have read about that before. There may have been some kind of technology or weapon, but do we have enough evidence to say that that was any kind of functioning time travel technology? I mean, it's difficult to believe, given that time travel, like you say, is an inherently incredibly complex idea, based on a deep understanding of the laws of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And given that back then, I mean, they didn't even know about like the speed of light and wave particle interactions and all that kind of basic stuff that you can learn at school today.
They were dumbasses.
Seems kind of hard to understand how they would have access to some sort of time travel insight that scientists today do not have access to. You know, don't get me started on whether the ancient Anunnaki had time travel. That's another business. I think people in the Stone Age were time traveling, you know, for brunch. Let me tell you that. But
I love that the Anunnaki is basically your paranormal Nazis, basically. We're getting too fired up.
You think if the Anunnaki missed the brunch menu at their favorite brunch spot, they're not going to time travel back to 11 a.m.? You're out of your mind.
But Kit, does it matter if scientists in the 1920s or 30s don't know how to travel through time? If these scientists in the 2030s do?
So you're saying if they do, then they travel back in time and then the technology is there?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
It's a spicy idea, but I think with all the evidence we have, we need like corroborated evidence, because whilst we have a glut of evidence, it is from one historical source. It is from Annie and Heather.
It's true.
We need, I know it's difficult for Annie because she's trying to hide shit, but we need some amount of authority to confirm this. And for that reason, for me today, I don't think I can say that Project Kronos resulted in a functioning time machine.
Yeah, in any capacity, really. One of the things that's a big holdup for me is, obviously, if these secret projects did exist, be it the time-traveling hitman or simply this experiment in Cambridge with Annie, if we were blowing the lid on these experiments right now, we would be stopped.
Yeah.
A time traveler who is an assassin would appear right now, probably at the conclusion of this podcast, because we haven't uploaded it yet, would come in and slice us into with a katana.
They would be a ninja. They would, of course.
No one's turned up. I haven't even turned up from the future saying, bro, you got this all wrong. You need to say that it's a double yes. Because I would do, yeah, I would do that if I got it
wrong. I'd be that petty. I would use the time machine to get that.
Of course. But nothing's happened. We've had no one come back in time to stop us, which would lead me to believe that maybe time travel in our timeline doesn't exist. And maybe it won't ever exist, because we need someone from one of the other timelines where it does to bring it here first.
That's a depressing state of affairs, ladies and gents.
So unfortunately for part two of Project Kronos, it looks like it is going to be this week a double no.
No.
That is right. But thank you everyone for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope part two didn't disappoint. As you can see, there's a lot of crazy stuff in there that we couldn't quite just squeeze into the first episode.
Listen, it was a huge prestige level, devs level quantum time travel experiment. And we had to deep dive. We just had to.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't have a time machine, and that's fine. I can't imagine I would use it wisely.
Every other technology I have been granted, I have used and abused.
I think if I got a time machine, I would probably, this might be irresponsible, this might not be irresponsible, I'd probably just, like, spin the dial, so it's, like, going through the years from, like, 1800s to, you know, spinning it all the way up to 2000s.
You spin it so hard it breaks, you don't even, it doesn't say anything anymore.
And while it's spinning, I just, like, cock a gun and like unload into the portal, and I'll have like a collection of famous world newspapers in front of me, and like as I fire, I'll be able to see if they change. So like what I did to change the world.
You are A war criminal.
That might be irresponsible or not.
It's incredibly irresponsible. I'm impressed by the level of irresponsibility you could dream up on the spot.
What would you do if you had a time machine?
If I had a time machine, I would honestly just go back a couple of years and just spend one more day with my dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's dead, I guess?
Yeah. It's a sore spot for me. But that is what I would do. That is my one regret. That is my one wish. Is to go back. And honestly, I'm a little crushed that this turned out to be a double no, because that was just what I was holding on for.
That is sad.
But the gun thing, I mean, that was pretty, you know, that was funny though.
Well, that would be like the first thing that I do, and probably not even for that long. I do it for like 2 seconds.
Right.
And then I would probably go back in time and stop the world wars from happening, both of them. So you wanted to go back and hug your dog? One more time, you said?
Yeah, well,
that's fine as well.
That would be like the first thing, obviously. Like, you just want to get it out of the way, of course,
before you start doing
serious humanitarian work. Because it's not that simple to just stop a war, okay? So I would go back and I would liberate all peoples of the world that have been made refugees, that have been impacted by various natural disasters. But, you know, if you want to pick like the kind of glory hunting moment of stopping the war, then that's good for you.
All right. That seems pretty selfish, though, being unaware of the butterfly effect that liberating all peoples of the world could have. But that's fine if you wanted to do that. I'd probably go back in time and free the slaves who were told to build the pyramids.
Well, that's liberating people, okay? And you're saying you don't want the pyramids to exist, because the pyramids are pretty dope.
I'd build them myself, right? I got all the time in the world. I'd build the pyramids myself.
You think you can lift a rock that big? You think you can lift a one-ton rock?
Well, I got
yourself?
Enough time to get jacked as well, don't I? I'd be doing squats and fucking deadlifts and shit. I'd be like a god to them. Actually, that sounds pretty good. I think I'd do that, actually.
You become a god?
A mean god. I'd go back and I'd pretty much rule the place.
You would create a giant stone time travel machine and unload arrow after arrow into the time machine.
I would rule ancient Egypt, me along with your dog, which I ganked from a timeline.
Yeah, funny enough, my dog didn't die. It just disappeared one day.
One day it sank into the floor.
And Rory's business card had just fallen on the ground in my living room.
Oh, God. That's how
it just said Rory Powers, Pharaoh and God.
That's how we would use our time machines. Let us know how you would use your time machines, sending in your suggestions and investigations into this paranormal life podcast at gmail.com. Guys, if you enjoyed the show this week or any week, what if I told you you could get even more sweet, delicious bonus content? But it's not from the days of the pyramids. No, it's from the last couple months is when we did them.
Pretty recently,
so they're fresh. We have a whole banquet full of bonus episodes ready to be gobbled up with support at only $5 a month.
$5.
$5, guys. What is that in pounds these days? I don't know. It changes so much.
Whatever we say will be drastically out of date, but at the time of recording, it's it's actually 35 pounds. Pretty up there.
That's how bad it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. Things are not good.
Ooh, okay. For £35, you can get a bonus content that is worth it, my friends. Very much worth it. So definitely check that out. And if you do support us on Patreon, what we'd like to do is give you a shout out at the very end of the podcast.
Thank you to Matthew O'Grady.
Matthew O'Gravy. No Sunday dinner is perfect without Matthew on the side. Not eating him. I just realized that sounded like I was eating him. No. I just meant like, he's like a fun person to have on a Sunday, chat, have some like roast potatoes and stuff, and maybe a little nibble on him.
So you're eating
him? Like a nibble, just a tiny bit though.
That's illegal. Thank you to Crystal Hacka.
Crystal Hack has been down in the mines hacking crystals. That's right, me and going down there deeps into the wizard realms. Because that's what happens when you go deep enough. You go down into wizard territory.
The wizards live underground. That's terrifying.
Well, they don't live up here.
Like goblins?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been banished down there. So you dig deep enough, you're going to get a couple wizard crystals. Well done, Crystal.
Thank you also to Hannah Roberts.
Come on down to Hannah's Katanas. That's right, be you a ancient samurai or a samurai from the future, we've got the sword for you.
But if you are not a samurai, don't fucking step foot on the lot, or else you will, yes, you will get cut down by a present-day samurai, that is Shogun Hannah.
Hannah herself.
Thank you also to Caroline Svinkerod.
If it's Caroline, you're looking mighty fine. And if it's Carolyn, you're looking mighty thin. You look like a dolphin these days, is what I'm saying.
Got fins?
Yeah, she's always kind of in a wetsuit, has a hole in her back. I'm kind of worried about her. I think she's doing like some sort of mutant transformation.
Interesting. Trying to unlearn English and instead learn dolphin chatter.
Of course, which, let's face it, we all would if we could.
So, Caroline, thank you so much for tuning in.
Whoa, you just told her to F off.
Oh.
Be careful, man.
Thank you also to Jeff Weitzel.
Jeff Weitzel from Weitzel's Pretzels? You get them with salt, get them with mustard, get some of those hot, doughy pretzels.
Are you trying to say pretzel? Is it a pretzel?
What he makes can't legally be described as a pretzel. It lacks and includes some ingredients that should not be eaten.
I'm looking at it online here. It's bark. It's made of bark.
There's some bark involved. Not pure bark. You didn't mention the Beatles.
Oh, jeez.
But they are optional.
He just doesn't clean the bark. There's still Beatles on it. Thank you to Luke Elliott. It's Luke the Nuke. So called because if you drop him into a social situation,
boom.
It's over.
No survivors.
This guy's chat is so boring.
Sorry, Luke.
You actually hire him for dinner parties, things like that. When you want the night to end,
yeah.
Luke swoops in, he bores everyone's ears off, and then they all take off, leaving you to a nice little quiet tidy-up.
Yeah, it's a pretty good plan, actually.
It's a good service you provide, Luke. It's a way to monetize your lack of assets. Thank you to Harmon. There's no Harmon.
You can't hurt him?
Nah.
Wow.
Borderline invincible.
That's pretty bad. Well, that's pretty great.
On account of the Zorb ball that they wear at all times. Try and run him over with a truck.
Zorb.
That'll do it, actually. That will pop the ball.
That'll... So he's not...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is Harmon.
Right, but anything below running over with the truck, he's pretty good.
What about a spear? If I just threw a spear at
him? That would take out the Zorb. That would go through. That would...
It seems like a lot of things can harm Harmon.
Fire would melt it. Yeah.
Yeah, because when you said there's no Harmon, that he's...
Right, a punch or a kick wouldn't get through.
I thought, what if I kind of, instead of a fist, just pointed my fingers?
That would be sharp enough. If you had sharp nails, that would go through the Zorb.
Probably. He seems pretty harmable. There is Harmon.
Right, well, it wouldn't rhyme otherwise. Thank you to Lizzie Evans. Well, if it isn't Dizzy Evans, Lizzie is actually somewhat related to UK rapper Dizzy Rascal, but where Dizzy got some cool rap abilities, Lizzie just has a debilitating amount of dizziness.
Vertigo, essentially.
Pretty awful. Pretty awful. She can rap. She can, but it just doesn't... She doesn't have the same stage presence because she can't stand up. She can't get the crowd going.
It's mostly about like raps about being confused and lost and not knowing
where
she is.
Quite sad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really a hype track, a club track. You know? Thank you to Daisha Hill.
Jack and Jill and Daisha Hill are all allergic to water.
Allergic to water?
That's right.
How do they live?
Poorly.
Oh.
Is how they live. Because as you know, human beings are 60% water.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Anymore, and they would be dead.
I thought they could just drink milk.
No. Milk is milk water? There's got to be some
water
in milk,
mostly,
right?
Mostly water. Most things are water.
What isn't water? I mean, rock is, of course. But liquids. Drinkable liquids.
I mean, they're all like...
Apple juice is f***ing water.
Oh, of course it's water.
What the hell? Why am I just realizing this now?
Even like oil, I'm pretty sure, is just...
Water?
Water. You know what I mean? It's like...
Dude, big water are running this planet.
We need to invest in water, because it turns out a lot of shit is water.
What about like syrup? Bee syrup?
Honey?
Honey, yeah. Is that water?
Mostly water.
No!
Of course. Where does the... Water is just like the basis of everything.
What is in water? What can you drink that isn't water? Soup? That's water.
I read a dope thing recently. It was like...
I can't just Google what isn't water.
You get your phone taken off you for being a dumbass. I read recently there's like a cloud of water in somewhere in the universe that they found. And it's like...
Wait, just a cloud? Wait, what?
Yeah, just like a floating cloud of water.
So not even a cloud at that point, right? Is it just...
It's just floating water. And apparently it's like...
This is
crazy. It's like 1 trillion times the weight of Earth or something.
Why don't we investigate that?
Yeah.
The surf planet.
The Silver Surfer. No, you misunderstand. He surfs a wave forever.
God, that sounds like your nightmare, as you were allergic to water, but hell, I'm glad you're still kicking about.
Thank you also to Dan Brown.
Dan Brown, the man in the crown. Don't get him confused with the king, because the king gets really upset with that.
Is he some sort of burger king, if you will?
Yeah, he's more of a fast food fanatic who also happens to wear a crown. But Dan very much will tell people that he's the king. He is not the king. What we like to do is indulge him and just be like, oh, of course, your highness. Bow to him a little bit. Kisses rings, which are ring pops, so you get a bit of fruity deliciousness.
Why are we humoring him?
It's easier. It's easier than telling him that he's not a king. So just everyone play along. That would be great.
Thank you to Janae Warner. I tried to warn her, but Janae wouldn't listen. She jumped into that time machine at 120% capacity with the dial broken off because Rory smashed it to bits. And she ended up in the Jurassic era. That's right. Her friends are dinosaurs. Her enemies are also dinosaurs. Her family. There's no family because dinosaurs don't have family.
Right, of course. She befriended dinosaurs? That's pretty badass.
Friends is a strong word. They tolerate her existence. They're mostly herbivores.
Got it. Very little to gain from her.
Thank you also to Alex Minchell.
Alex Minchell, the pinch doll. You know when they would like release all those dolls to kids and it's like, oh, this one can eat berries from a spoon. This one can piss. This doll...
The thing is, I remember that. I don't know if our listeners remember that, which sounds weird.
This doll pinches. Pinches like it wants a fight. This little 2 foot...
2 foot, 240 pounds somehow.
Lobster clawed demon will pinch and pinch and pinch until
it's a giant lobster. It is.
In a diaper. It's a lobster in a diaper.
And it can piss.
Actually loves berries and pissing as well.
That's an unlisted feature of this doll.
It's more of a byproduct. The fuel that enables the doll to piss actually needs to run through the unit in some factor. Yes, via the doll's penis. Meaning that it also pisses, of course. But it's mostly sold on its pinching properties.
Do not buy this for your kids. It's a bad role model.
Alex, why did you even make, nay, be the doll?
Thank you also to Tom Turner. Tom Turner, the ROM burner. If you want any kind of illegally hacked video game from the years 1970 through 2005,
mm-hmm.
Tom's your guy.
Burning ROMs.
Burning ROMs all day longs. He is terrible. I don't know if you've ever played him in any of these games. Mario Kart, Smash Bros, any of these things. He's garbage. He can't play for shit.
He doesn't have to. He's the guy that knows how to get it done.
He's like the architect.
Exactly. You think the architect is good at Kung Fu? Of course he's not. He just has to sit in the chair. He doesn't have to be.
He can delete your fucking existence, which is also what Tom can do. He can delete your save file. Thank you to Eli Hedges.
Come on down to Eli's Hedges, where you can get all the hedges you need. You want big hedges, small hedges, hedges with berries? Those babies gotta eat.
Babies? I thought they were dolls.
Those baby dolls gotta eat. And Eli's got the goods. You can have hedges, hollow hedges to hide in, thick hedges to guard stuff. This is the TV advert.
Weird ad.
We got hedges that don't even look like hedges. Hedges that look like trucks. Park them around your house. No one can see in. Come down to Eli's Hedges.
I'm not going to come.
And remember, the grass is always greener in the hedge.
Surprisingly good catchphrase.
It's all right, isn't it? He nailed the catchphrase. Everything else is kind of...
The rest of the copy was off the wall.
Terrible.
Thank you to Kyle Lockwood. Knock on wood, it's Kyle Lockwood. I knock on wood because Kyle's incredibly dangerous and I wouldn't want him to actually be around.
Oh, why is he so dangerous?
He's a mass murderer.
Oh, nothing even to do with wood.
No. It's just knock
it's just
on wood.
Oh, right.
Let's get lucky because hopefully he's not here because he's a dangerous, awful criminal murderer. Thank you to Lauren Jones. Lauren Jones digs up foreign bones. She's the best archaeologist in the world.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Better than, I was going to say the guy from Jurassic Park, but he's a paleontologist.
Yeah. I think the most famous one is Indiana Jones.
Yeah, he's pretty popular. She's bigger than him.
Well, he wasn't really a bone guy. He was more like a treasure guy. You know what I'm saying?
He's all about the glitz, the glory, yeah, the glam.
Exactly. Whereas Lauren is the academic. You know what I mean?
Even in the last movie, they were like, hey, I found this alien skull. And he's like, get that shit out of my sight. And they were like, well, it's made of crystal. A crystal skull, you say? Now you speaky my language.
I love skulls.
Yeah, now I like bones.
Oh, it just means it's a skull shaped like a crystal.
Get that. He stomps it with his friggin' boot.
Thank you, lastly but not leastly, to Jem Taylor. Jem Taylor is a jam sailor. That's right, a very historical figure. They sailed the seven seas selling jam all around the world.
Is that a lucrative bit? I guess it is. Everyone likes jam, right?
It was until, you think everyone likes jazz, until they got to the Polynesian
Islands.
Wait, did
you say jam or jazz?
Jam.
Oh, right, okay.
Because no, not everyone likes jazz. Of course not. Taylor got to the Polynesian Islands and turns out they do not take kindly to jam. Wow. On their island. It's sticky, it's a very overpowering flavor. Okay. They murdered them.
Is my telling a stupid question?
Right.
And I don't want to go out on a stupid question, but sure. I have to ask it.
Okay.
Is jam water?
A good amount of it is water.
What the f***, man? Yeah, what isn't water?
Will I Google it right now? I Google it.
Yeah, just, I genuinely want to know what comes up.
What isn't? So the first result was, what isn't kosher, which is a more sensible
good question.
Question.
Is water kosher?
I'm pretty sure.
You're taking a genuinely suspicious amount of time. Is this going to say something like, everything is water? Everything is technically water? Nothing's not water?
What? Okay, I need to rephrase. What liquid isn't water? I've gone downhill since school, I'll tell you that much. Hey, all right, this isn't the dumbest question after all.
Okay. It just sounded stupid. I'm sure there's a sensible way of wording this.
Yeah, there is a sensible way of wording this.
Awesome. Let's cut out all those questions we asked earlier.
Every pure element in liquid form does not contain water.
Okay.
So whilst, like I said, you know, oil, for example, is going to be a certain amount of water because it's not pure. But as this guy points out, gasoline theoretically doesn't have water in it. Because it's like a pure chemical.
Right. It in itself is...
is the liquid.
Okay, I see.
So...
that's genuinely,
you know,
pretty interesting.
So like mercury in a thermometer, there's no zero water in that. That's
like
just
red mercury in a Nazi Dichrocken.
It's a double yes!
Serum 525 is, of course, 0% water.
It is.
Wow, that's incredible. I'm glad we managed to sensibly tie up that with some scientific investigation right there at the end. That's like having a little after-dinner mint after eating a shit sandwich. to go out on something semi-comprehensible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for eating down this week's shit sandwich. I hope you had a great... it was a two-parter. It was a foot long.
It was a club's shit sandwich.
This week. As always, we'll be back next week with another serving. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.